Easter Sunday, March 23rd, 2008. My goodness. 2008. Easter Sunday. This is Dr. Herbert L. Barley, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campo, California, bringing you our talk for Easter Sunday. Our theme is Inside Jesus' Head. We might just walk through some of the thoughts that we'll be talking about. First point, it's at his birth. How did he observe the theater of being born? You can be sure that Jesus was wide awake and he was alert to everything that was going on, and he thought it was a great experience. His attitude about his parents' attitude about his birth. His thought about how his parents raised him and the treatment he had with his brothers and sisters from his point of view. What he thought at 12 as he visited the priests in the temple. What he told his friends about his adventure in the temple. Jesus' brothers and sisters belittled his sacred birth and what he told them about himself. What Jesus thought and said about the wedding feast wine. Jesus' attitude about working with his father in his woodworking business. Why Jesus disappeared from the scene from time to time, and where he was, and what he was doing from his point of view. In Jesus' mind, how he traveled the world, leaving his mark behind and leaving an indelible impression on the cultures he touched. How Jesus orchestrated his baptism and had those who were able to see what he was going on for himself. Jesus thought on the death of John the Baptist. Jesus viewed his miracles as a normal activity. Jesus viewed raising the dead as not raising the dead. Jesus trained his disciples in the expressions they already were accomplished beings. Jesus viewed life not as a business, but as a profession. Jesus told his disciples he was going to leave them so the Comforter couldn't come unto them. Jesus was untouched before, on, or after the cross. Jesus did not leave. He changed his form and continued to travel the universe as a revealed being. Jesus told the disciples and the world, all is God, and each are the Christ consciousness which he demonstrated. Jesus' life is a never-ending story. That's quite a mouthful, isn't it? If you have patience, we may run through the whole thing. But we'll just patiently go along from point to point. At birth, how did Jesus observe the theater that was going on around him? At birth, how did Jesus think about the things that we now call the angels announcing his birth and the shepherds coming in and all these circumstances that were there, the kings and what have you? Now, I find it most fascinating to look at the stories that are being told today based upon the logic and reason of the time of why things happened the way they did. And people want to make them into a logical tale, into some logical reasoning because King Herod and all that other sort of stuff going on at the time. Well, actually, none of those things had anything whatsoever to do with the birth of Jesus. Jesus was a spiritual being, as we all are, and he was born in a very special time when his parents were away from home. And true, they left because of one reason or another, but that's not the point. Jesus was on the way before that, before they decided to go to these other places. But what was Jesus' attitude as he was watching this? He was born, and he popped out without any problem. His mother didn't scream and holler and yell, ay, 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 you know. It just was like popcorn, smooth as could be. The massage that Jesus had as he was born was just an overall smooth massage that just nice as you can please. Now, as he was born, they wrapped him in swaddling clothes, which meant a very tight wrapping, because they didn't want his bowel movements and so forth to get out and stuff like that. But that's kind of silly. They had him there, and Jesus looked at the whole thing, and he was totally aware, as each of us are too. At our birth, we are totally aware. We just don't have the vocabulary to describe it, nor do we have the ability to utilize our limbs to walk around and express ourselves as we could. But he was totally aware. Now, his attitude about his birth was simply that, hey, I am the master. I am the king. I am God. I am all. Now you say, if he knew that right away at the beginning, why didn't he talk about it right away? He did. He did. Do you know anybody else who has a birth that was quite as spectacular as his, that had all the fanfare that he had? I mean, he got fanfare from heaven. He got fanfare from all of the shepherds, people who had no idea who he was. He got fanfare from the wise men who came from other places that were far distant, and they had no reason to know who he was. But he put a good program on, and everybody remembered it. Now, I'm making this statement right now because I want you to remember it later on. Everybody remembered his birth. Everybody remembered his special virgin birth, his special birth that he had. Everyone remembered it. Okay. His parents were very taken by his birth, and they treated it properly. Now, are we really saying his parents? Are we really saying his father Joseph and his mother Mary? Or are we saying his father Joseph and the Immaculate Conception of the Divine touched Mary and brought forth this birth? Is such a thing possible? Yes, such a thing has been known to happen very readily in many parts of the world. And people don't talk about it because people will say, oh yeah, they're fooling around, you know. And that's why they got pregnant. But it's true. It was an immaculate conception. Many of them are. Many of them are. And who knows what your conception was? Your conception could well have been an immaculate conception, and you haven't acknowledged it yet, and you haven't realized it yet. And what does an immaculate conception mean? You are born out of your divinity, not your humanity. Are you born out of your divinity? Yes. Are we all born out of our divinity? Do some of us feel we're born out of our humanity? Well, some do. And because some people feel they're born out of their humanity, then they are born with limitations. When you're born out of your divinity, you have no limitations. The whole world just sparkles out for you. And this is what Jesus knew. And he knew this from the beginning. And so, did he receive the frankincense and myrrh and all the gold and all the good things from the wise men? Yes, he did. And what did they do? Did they put strings on it? They say to them, you got to shape up. You got to be nice to our country, you know, when you're king. When you get into the power and things like that. Well, see, from that very early point, they thought he was going to be a power over men. They thought he was going to be a king over humanity. And what was he a king over? He was a king over divinity. He was master of his divinity. And many people didn't recognize it, and they didn't choose to recognize it, because they liked to play with the obvious. And we say, where was Jesus born? He was born in a manger, in a stable. You know, he was born, they didn't have room for him at the inn. You know, all very dramatic, all very magical and exciting. Well, what if he had been born in an inn, in a proper room and in the inn? Who would have known? And could all these shepherds and people come walking in and out of his bedroom? Not very well. They couldn't have come into the hotel and say, get that stuff out of here. Get those sheep out of here. Get those cows and horses and pigs out of here. You know, they don't belong in here. But because he chose the stable, all of these elements could come into it. Now, we have not really given that much credit up to now because we thought, well, that's just the way it was. Well, that's not just the way it was. That's the way he created it to be. Now, many other people create interesting births, too. They create interesting births that have all sorts of interesting things. Some are born on a lotus leaf, remember? And some were born in a very special circumstances. And who's to know? Who's to know? Now, all of Jesus' life, he was well aware of every little nuance of his life, every little avenue of his life, every little experience. There was nothing hidden. There was nothing that he wasn't aware of. And there was nothing that he did not orchestrate. Now, do you know what the word orchestrate means? He directed it. He directed it with all of the parties that came in, all of the circumstances that came in, all of the magic that came in, all of the tragedy, the apparent tragedy that came in. He orchestrated that all because this was part of his show. And he loved it. And this is what was going on in his head. Hey, yep, this is great. I like this, you know. This is super. And then, do you think he'd read any books? No. Do you think that he knew what went on in the world and that he knew what people were going on and doing things? Not really. He just was himself. He didn't have to know anybody else's show. He only knew his own show. And that was all that mattered to him. Nothing else made any difference in the world to him except what he was doing. And really, that was the same true for all of us. We all just cared about our own little world. We just wanted to suck on our own little toe. And we wanted to get people to take care of us how we wanted it done. Well, Jesus bypassed a lot of that. He bypassed a lot of that because he felt that he didn't have to wait. So by the time he was 12, what happened? He was a brilliant man. He knew how to express himself. How old are the kids when they go to school and they learn to be scribes and they learn to be priests and so on? How old are they? They're usually 2 or 3 years old. They start them out early. Remember Swami Rama? And what happened to him? His master chose him before he was born. Mm-hmm. And went and told his parents that he was going to be there. Now, is that a joke? No, that's a real thing. Now, was Jesus foretold in the Bible? Was Jesus foretold in ancient history? Sure. No. Was he foretold even at the time he was born? Yes. The angels presumably came down and spoke. Well, come on, Herb, get off it. This is, you know, about the 21st century. We don't do things like that here. Oh, yes, we do. Oh, yes, we do. Just look at the Big Bang Theory. What an interesting creation that is. And just look at our friend Edison and our friend Einstein. Einstein goes around just letting whatever pops out of his mind pop out of his mind, and then the rest of the world says, genius, brilliant, genius, brilliant, and they try to disprove it, and they can't, so then they say it must be so. And, well, that's okay. That's okay. But really, Jesus did the same thing. Now, let's see, we have a point here. He thought about how his parents raised him, and his thought about how his parents raised him, and the treatment he had with his brothers and sisters from his point of view. Well, as he was a young man, his brothers and sisters attempted to get him to do his share of the work as a young man, you know. And he had too many things on his mind. He was working on too many projects. He was out talking to his friends. He was out walking the paths. And he would disappear from home for weeks on end. They didn't know where he was. So when he turned up at the age of 12, coming back from a trip with the family, and he was missing, they didn't even miss him. They didn't even miss him until a couple days later. And they say, isn't he over at your house? You know? No, he's not at our house. And they backtracked and found him in the temple talking to the rabbis, to the teachers. And what was he saying to the teachers? He was confounding the teachers with his statements. They would say to him that God is a merciful God, and God is a terrible God, and God wreaths out his vengeance upon humanity, and God really wants to take the spoils of the earth for itself, you know. And Jesus said, no, no. I don't know where you got that idea about God, but God is my Father, and I am God, and we're good, we're loving, we're gentle, we're peaceful. And they said, oh, come on, kid, get off it. You know, look at history, look at history. And Jesus said, yeah, look at history. And Jesus had not lived his history, and he had not read history. He was not acquainted with all these things. He's only acquainted with the Hebrew teachings. And yet he listened from his inner voice, which told him, hey, that's not the way it works. That's not the way it works. All of humanity is a loving humanity. Love your mothers, love your father, love your home, love your community, love your world, yes? And then the wisdom of Jesus, the wisdom of this brilliant young man, he took them back. He took them back to the sparrow that falls and the presence the Father knows thereof. He took them back to the animals that love one another. Oh, it's true, there is a chain of food, and one type of being eats another type of being, but mankind does the same thing. And mankind just doesn't eat its own kind, but it eats everything else under the sun. And Jesus explained this to the rabbis and to the priests. And as he explained it to them, they realized this kid had something going. He knew what he was talking about. So then, when Jesus came back home, and his brothers and sisters said, where you been? What you been doing? And he said, oh, just out having a good time. And they said, oh, come on now. You know, you're supposed to stick around the house here and do some work and things like that. He says, yeah, when you catch me. And so, next week he was off again. He didn't say where he was going, what he was doing, how he was doing it. And he'd be gone sometimes months at a time. Because his early life we have very little knowledge of, because he was traveling around the world. Here he was, this young punk kid, who was so brilliant, he was just an Einstein in short pants, you know. And as he went around, everybody recognized instantly that he was brilliant, but he didn't have to say it. All he did was tell the stories like he told in his Sermon on the Mount. Little stories, little parables to the people. And as he told these parables, the people listened to it and said, wow, what a brilliant mind. Wow, what a brilliant word. Because they could understand. They could understand what he was saying. And all these people all over the world were touched by him. Now, how did he get all over the world? By foot. How did he get all over the world? By traveling, you know, by foot. Because that's quite a bit of distance. Well, as we know, you can travel in your dreams anywhere you want to go. Well, he not only knew that, he lived it. He realized that wherever his thought took him, that's where he was. So he would be here and there and all over the world, all over the universe, talking to groups of people, talking to young children, telling them how wonderful they are, telling the adults how great they are. He would, like kind of a magical flash, appear in the middle of a group of elders gathered talking on things. And here he'd be like a magic experience for them. And they'd say, where'd you come from? How, well, you know, God sent me. And so they'd say, well, tell us what God had to say. Tell us. And, you know, they were taken by his magic. They were taken by his presence. But this happens all the time. People do that all the time. If you were aware of yourself, you'd realize you're doing it far more often than you give yourself credit for it. But you do it. You travel the world. But you have no message. Maybe one day you'll have a message. You say, well, I got a message. No, you don't. All you have is just to be having fun and doing what pleases you. You don't have a message of going out and being the way, the truth, and the light for all the world. Your only message is just to have fun, be yourself. And even that, you're not sure about. Even that, you doubt. Even that, you feel that you got to go out and correct the world and clean up the world and tell the world how to live. And because you do that, the world says, get lost. And so you never realize how all the places you've been. I tell you the story of Mr. Candle, and you say, fairy tale. Okay, fine. But think about it. Okay. Mm-hmm. What he told his friends about his adventures in the temple. When he came back from visiting the priests, when he came back from his world travels, as he did every so often, his friends would see him, oh, Jesus, where the heck you been, you know? And he'd say, oh, out and about. Well, Jesus, what do you think of this? And they'd explain to him some experience that they were going through, that they lost their sister, she was very ill. And then Jesus would say to them, hey, she only sleeps. We buried her a month ago. What do you mean she only sleeps? She only sleeps. And so he'd take the family, he'd take the people to go visit and see. And when they went there, what did they find? She was only sleeping, like Sleeping Beauty. And the mother leaned over and kissed the child. And the child sat up and said, I'm hungry. And that's true. Every story in the Bible that talks about Jesus bringing forth any one of the people who are sleeping, they're right away hungry. Now, what did Jesus tell them? Jesus said, your life is your treasure. Your life is your grand experience. What do you want to get out of life? What do you want to have? Do you want to be yourself and have fun? Or do you want to be the way, the truth, and the life? And he turned more women on to the way and the truth and the life than he did men. We hear about the men because he had to work harder with them. But with the women, he merely touched them and said, go forth. And they went forth because they instantly were tuned in to the harmony, the peace, and the goodness that he was. The men had to prove it to them. You had to prove it to them. And that's why the 12 disciples, and that's why the 76 trombones, you know, and that's why all these silly things. Jesus didn't work hard. He just was himself and having fun. And he casually talked with everybody. And he casually said to everybody, you are the way, the truth, and the life. And all that come unto me is the way, the truth, and the life. That's all I'm able to share. That's all I'm able to do. And it didn't bother him. He didn't have to look for something to eat. He didn't have to look for clothes to wear. When he needed something, it was there for him. When he wanted anything, it was there for him. He lived his life so pure, so beautiful, and so fantastic that everyone who came into his presence was instantly awed by his charisma. His charisma was not a possessive charisma. His charisma was a love charisma, which you could not ignore. And that love charisma was so powerful and so beautiful and so overwhelming that every single person, man, woman, or child, that came into his presence instantly fell in love with him. Not with possession, but with respect and honor, with a belief that was unshakable. So, Jesus' brothers and sisters belittled his sacred birth, and this is what he told them about himself. His brothers and sisters, as his mother had come to the temple and said, send forth Jesus, we want to talk to him. And he says, who are my brother and who are my mother, ye who follow my word? What did he tell his brothers and sisters and his mother about who he was? They said, look, I have chosen a sacred mission for myself in this life. I will do many things. I will do many interesting things and many things that will shake you up. But I will do these things. And these things will not be appreciated. they will not be appreciated because the powers that be, the intellectual right of the university, will say, that can't be so. You didn't get a degree here. You didn't study here. You didn't learn here. You didn't earn your proof that you're a worthwhile being, you know. It's true, he was a rabbi. He took his rabbi training and was successful. But the rabbis, the elders, who lived long, and because they lived long, they had experience. And because they had experience, they felt that that experience was what they really believed, and that that was what they really knew was right for them. This is part of what that's all about. And as he told his friends about this, and he told his world about this, what happened? Right away, they wanted to put him down. They wanted to say, hey, that can't be so. And then, when this young shyster comes around and starts raising the dead and releasing the sick from their bondage and lifting the sad-hearted and telling the woman by the well that he had nothing against her either, go and sin no more. You see, as he did all these things, he didn't win any laurels from the community and from the world at large. Little by little, they were against him, were against him. Now, if he had gone out into the desert and drawn to him just a separate group of people, they would have loved him and worshipped him until he told them off. They look, it's done unto you according to your belief. I've healed enough of you. I want you to do it for yourself now. But you know how, you do it. When you do it, we're healed, we're perfect. And yeah, but I want you to do it for yourself. Because the next time you need me, I might not be here. I might be somewhere else. And then you'd have to do it for yourself, or come find me. And I might be a long way away. And they hated him for that. They hated him because they felt that he was ignoring their simple requests. You raised my sister from the dead, but can't you get rid of my cold? You know? Simple little things like that. So these were the things that he told. He told his brothers and sisters. And his brothers and sisters says, yeah, sure, you think you're so almighty, you know. Because he tried not to do these magical things at home. Because one time when he did do it, his mother saw it, and then she asked him to create wine at the wedding, if you recall. And he created wine which was superior to the wine that they had had. But he created wine. I mean, what a stupid thing to do, create wine. But why did he create wine, tell me? His mother asked him. And he was an obedient son. He was an independent person, but he was still obedient. He still respected his mother, and he taught respect for parents, respect for family, respect for everything. And how could he deny that same respect? He had to follow through on it. But then he made himself scarce, so his mother couldn't ask for more things, which is what many young children do. They make themselves scarce so that they do not have to do things out of context. Because that's what they do a lot of times. They do these things out of context. And when they do things out of context, what happens? When they do things out of context, then you're just thinking that it's a lean, mean healing machine, you know? There's somebody going around healing everybody, and that's not the truth. He taught people to do it for themselves. He taught his disciples to do it for himself, and his disciples within 3 years, and they couldn't even do it. Now, why couldn't the disciples do it? The disciples couldn't do it because they knew Jesus could do it easily. And they knew Jesus was always there when it was done. So Jesus had to be there when the healing was done. So the disciples say, come on, Jesus, I'll show you how I do it. Go out in the field and then talk to some sick person, and Jesus is there. And so the disciple thinks that Jesus is doing it while the disciple really is doing it himself. You know? But this is simple little things, crazy things, the way people act. Well, what was going on in Jesus' head? He says, ah, I've been there, done that. I know that nonsense. No big deal, you know. But he still worked with them. He still loved them. He still treated them with all respect, with all honor, and with all joy. And many things happened. Many wonderful things. Okay. What Jesus thought and said about the wedding feast. He said, forget it. He did it, but then he said, forget it, no more. And he disappeared with his buddies, off to doing what he wanted to do. Really? Just the one big jug of wine. And you know how much that jug held? Probably about 50 gallons. That's a big jug, you know? Really beautiful. Okay, here's our next point. Jesus' attitude about working with his Father in his woodworking business. Now, we all think of Jesus as the carpenter or the carpenter's son. And Jesus, isn't that interesting? We all think of Jesus as the carpenter's son. We all think of Jesus as the carpenter's son. Didn't we get the message? Who is Jesus?
God.
God. And least of all, the Son of God. Not the son of a carpenter. He was not the carpenter's son. He may have been raised in the carpenter's house, but he's not the carpenter's son. Now, what did he learn in the woodworking business? Well, he did what his father asked him to do. And he sawed the wood, and he planed the wood, and he honed the wood, and he cut it, and made whatever things were to be made. And he did beautiful things. But you know what Jesus did? Tell me. He didn't use the tools.
Okay.
He saw what he wanted, and he saw it done. Now, he made sure that the chips were there, you know, and all the stuff was there that had to be there, but he just saw it done, and it was done. Now, why would he, who was a master at spiritual things, allow himself to do the work? Why would he, if he was a master, walk when he could be there? We hear Jesus is walking with his disciples. And then Jesus disappears. Next thing you know, he's where he's supposed to be. Nobody thinks that's strange. They think, well, he just went off into the woods to go potty or something, you know, and out of sight of the rest of the group. When he reappeared, there he was at where they were going, you know. I mean, we always want to draw the most logical, inane results from things, but we don't do the reason, though. What? Jesus is a spiritual master. You are a spiritual master. And a spiritual master is having fun. Now, when he came back and from his 40 days and 40 nights in the desert, and his disciples said to him, surely you're hungry and thirsty. He says, not really. And so they cursed the fig tree, remember? Now, who did these things? Was it Jesus? We like to say it was. Why would Jesus ever curse anything? If Jesus is the Son of God, if Jesus is God, if Jesus is a God of love, if God said, I created everything and called it good and very good, why would God, Jesus, why would you, I, anyone, curse anything? Why would we at any time belittle anything? He didn't. In his mind, he thought, oh, playing games again, aren't you? You see, they were rough and tough, tumbled guys. There were guys who were fishermen. There were guys who worked here and there. Oh, it was a tax collector and a few other things around there. But they were just ordinary people with an ordinary vocabulary and ordinary angry. And let me point something out to you right now that you haven't thought about, I'm sure. What was Jesus ethnically as he was born? He was a
Jew.
He was a Hebrew. He's a Jew. And what are the Jews famous for?
Intelligence.
The Jews are famous for arguing, for fighting and arguing and arguing and shouting and screaming and throwing out oaths. You know what an oath is? Damn it, damn it. You know, they damn everything, and they have oaths for everything, and they say, on my father's beard, you know, you won't get a penny out of me. And, you know, they have many oaths. A very dynamic, not violent, but yes, violent people, but very, very
dramatic.
That's a good word. Very dramatic people. And Jesus was raised in that culture. So when these people came out and said, no way, you know, you're some sort of fool, thinking that we'd take you and believe you, well, come. I will take you to your mother and watch. And so they went to the mother and watched, and the mother was raised. They lowered down the sick man through the ceiling of the house, you know. Mm-hmm. And what did Jesus say to him? Get the hell out of here. Pick up your bed and go home, you know. And people thought, what a thoughtless, what a uncaring person. Well, by the time the person was lowered into there, he had the vibrations of the Christ throughout him. He already believed that he could be healed, that he was healed. And then when Jesus said, it's done, go, get out, you know, then it was done. And you see, the Jews have such a dynamic way of expressing themselves always. Very, very virulent, very powerful, very, very loud. And in those days, all you got to do is read the Sufi teachings and so forth, and read about what the Jewish people were doing at that time and how they were living and acting and being. And they were very tough people, very tough people, but good people. Good people from the point of view that they respected their own family. They respected their own city, their own community, their own rabbis. They respected God. They respected whatever they respected, you know. And they did it with all the vehemence, all the enthusiasm that they could muster. So Jesus knew this. Jesus knew this. He was one of that. But yet, he was teaching mild and mannered, mild and well-mannered beings. He says, go in peace always, remember? Mm-hmm. He always say, lay down your sword. Lay down your sword. We have come not to destroy, but to do what? We have come not to destroy the law and the prophets, but
to establish a
to
new one.
Bring you a new commandment. And that commandment is?
Love the Lord your God with all your heart and all your might.
Love your neighbor,
and love
like,
your neighbor like.
As you love yourself. Okay, now, do you think that they bought it? That was one of the really heavy stones for them, because, you see, the Hebrew teachings have 300,450,092 words to express that idea. And for Jesus to come along and wash away the potency of the scripture and replace it with two phrases, which is absolutely true, and to sort of bring it all down to point, it was very, very significant, very powerful. Well, that's what Jesus did. Well, now, once again, do you think he made friends by doing that? Mm-hmm. My goodness, no. For sure. When you teach little children to love themselves and love their neighbors and love their friends, when the parents are teaching them, don't associate with the other people. Say it.
This is us, our children.
Thank you. Don't associate with the other children from other races and other communities, the Sumerians and the various other groups. Don't do that. Don't do that. And Jesus said, we are all brothers. We are all one. We are all together. And that's what he taught. Now, didn't he teach that? Yes, he did. And that's what he wanted everybody to live and know. No, that's right. he wanted everyone to and know that, because they would live a good life in doing it. Now, how did he do that? How did he do that? How did he teach them to do that? He taught them to do that by loving the Lord their God with all their strength and power, and their neighbor like themselves. If you don't like yourself, how can you possibly ever like your neighbor, you know? And that became a big deal for him, you know. And so these are the things that he was teaching to everyone. And as he was teaching these things to them, great things happened in their life. So, this is what happened when Jesus was working with his dad in the woodworking business. He did all of these things, yes?
It was done.
And it is done unto you according to your belief. He was teaching this, and then he was demonstrating it. Now, our friend Daniel, our webmaster, he comes in here, and he likes to play games with us, and he gives us all a hard time, and he'll take a thing in his hand, say, "See here?" And then go like this here, and switch it, you know, and then he'll say, "Where is it?" You know. And so here we are, wondering, how did he do that? And he dropped it. But his hand was moving so fast, we didn't realize that he dropped it. But this is how Jesus did things to him. Not sleight of hand, but he did things so beautifully, so perfectly. He said, "It's your mind that's doing it. It's your thought that's doing this. Now demonstrate it." And when the centurion came and said, "Hey, my help is sick at the ranch. You know, can you help me?" Jesus said, "Just a few moments. I have taken care of a couple thousand people here, and I'll be right along with you." And the centurion said, "No, you tell me what to do, and I will do it. And he will do whatever I tell him to do, because he is my servant, and he knows what the rules are. He's got to do what I tell him." And so what did Jesus say? Nowhere in all Israel had he ever seen anything indicating such a great power of faith, such a great power of conviction, of belief in themselves. And this is what we want to do. We want to have that power of conviction in ourselves, that power of faith in ourselves, of living up to these things. And again, we're not having a sermon here. What we're doing is talking about what Jesus did. And he did good stuff, a lot of good stuff. I love the guy, you know. Now, why Jesus disappeared from the scene from time to time, and where was he, and what was he doing from his point of view? We've read the life and teachings of the Masters of the Far East, and we've read about Emil and Jas and Jethro and how they traveled by thought. And we said, "Yeah, sure, big deal, you know, a little dubious that it really happened." But it did happen. It did happen. These things actually took place. Now, we'll try to say it didn't. We'll do everything we can to put it down. But why did Baird Spaulding have such success in writing the story that he wrote? Why did he have such success in writing the story that he wrote? He had such success in writing the story he wrote because he didn't care if anybody believed him or not. And everyone questioned, where did he go? But nobody really cared. Because in many families, the young men would disappear for quite a while. And like the prodigal son, remember? The story of the prodigal son? He got his money, and off he went. And he went off, and he spent his money, and he came home poor. And his father says, "Son, I accept you back." Well, that's the way the families were. You could oftentimes go and do that. You could spend the family fortune and then come back and expect to be taken back in the family again. And the family would forgive you and take you in, especially if you were a specially good son. And Jesus was a specially good son. So when he went traveling and he came back into his family just readily accepted him. And they said, you know, what stories do you have to tell us? And he was wise enough not to tell them virtually anything, because they wouldn't believe it. Now, as we said, Baron Faulding, in writing The Life and Teachings of the Masters of the Far East, wrote so simply and so forthrightly that people just readily accepted it. And people readily accepted it could be true and it could not be true. They readily accepted that, what difference does it make? It's a good story. You understand?
Yeah.
It could be true and it could not be. It's a good story. No. We've been training ourselves with good stories all of our life. What are they called? Fairy tales. We have fairy tales, Alice in Wonderland. We have all of these stories told by whomever they told stories, you know. And they're called fairy tales. And they're told not to be real. But do you believe them?
Yep.
Oh, yes, you do. Do you believe that the ugly duckling is a true story? Mm-hmm. Do you believe that all of these other stories, do you believe Robin Hood and his merry men is a true story? It had some bearing in truth. Maybe it was really true all the way. And you see, all of these things are true. All of these things, but they put it in the fantasizing way so that people will not run it down. Because if it's run down, then, as the church has done at various times, all churches, Catholic and Protestant alike, as well as other groups, they ban a book, they ban movies, they ban things, you cannot watch it. Of course, all that does is make everybody want to go watch it. But when they ban things, that makes it even more important. So the church has attempted to stay away from banning things because they know the psychology of banning things. If you ban something, what is the person going to do? They want to read it. They want to see it. They want to know what it's all about.
Now I know what you mean by
it. Now you posted your bans of your forthcoming marriage. That's another type of ban. You haven't heard that in Europe? You post your bans in the church of your forthcoming marriage. Anyhow, that's what you do. And what happens? What happens? These stories are told in such sincerity and such such delight. People listen to them, look at them, and they accept them as true. Now, can you tell little children that there's no Santa Claus? How long is a child going to believe in Santa Claus? As long as it's productive. Now, did you hear me?
Yes.
As long as it's productive. Now, the kids aren't dumb. They're not stupid. Some are. Some want to say, there's no Santa Claus, blah, 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 because they've got some anxiety in their heart about it, you know. But when did you stop putting your tooth under your pillow? Huh? When did you stop putting your tooth under your pillow so the tooth fairy could come along and give you 50 cents for it, or a dime when I was a kid, you know? When did you stop? You stop when you stop losing your teeth. But basically, that's something that you do in those early years when you're losing your baby teeth, you know, and getting in your adult teeth. But that's just a game of play. Now, it's kind of pleasant. Who's going to say there's no tooth fairy when you got some money under your pillow? True, mom and dad may have put it there while you're sleeping, but I don't care. I'll take it anyway, you know. You know? Well, this is the the psychology that Jesus worked on with the people of his day. This is the psychology. Now, what did Jesus call his fairy tales?
Parables.
And? He called them parables, and he called them another name too.
Parables.
Yeah? Well, think about it. You should come up with this yourself. Now, what was the parable?
A fairy tale story.
A parable is a story with a moral, and a story with a purpose of being told, and the people who are wrapped into it may have never existed. Or it may be you and you and some things that you did that went together to make a nice parable, and so you no longer are you and you no longer are you. Now we have the new person who's taken on your persona and your persona, and that's become something new and beautiful. Interesting, isn't it? But this is how these things work out, and they work out just beautiful. You always have to make sure the red light's on. So that's why parables are used by Jesus to tell the stories of his adventures. Now, if you had moxie, understanding, wisdom, awareness, you would know that Jesus never made up a parable. These were real stories that he knew about. These are real people that he met in his home. Yes, just like Mr. Candle stories. They're real stories. Well, they're real stories that he knew in his experiences. Now, Jesus is in bed in his mother's house, and it's 10, 11 o'clock. Of course, there's no lights except the candle or the lamp. And so everybody's in bed. And so Jesus says to himself, I think I'll go and visit the gurus in India. I think I'll go over there. It should be getting close to morning there, so I'll go over and visit them. Or wherever, China, whatever. And so he pops over there. Now, how does he get there? Takes a train, a plane, a bus. He takes his mind. Now, how does he know where he wants to go? How does he know which guru he wants to visit? How does he know which pundit he wants to be aware of? Well, he creates that person, wherever they are, to be who he wants them to be. And so he creates himself just going to India or China because it's fun. And he arrives there, and there's nobody there. He snaps his finger, and the guy comes, you know, his creation, you know, like in Donald Simoda and the vampire, remember?
Yeah.
Yeah. And
Illusion.
Illusion, his book Illusions, yeah. So, you see, Jesus did these things. Now, they were not fake. They were all very real. And the things you're doing in your life are all very real. The Big Bang Theory can be as real as you want it or as false as you want it. It's up to you. If you want it to be real, then it's real for you. You live in the understanding and in the awareness that it's real. Or you live in the awareness that it's false. You can have it either way. And you say, well, that seems kind of unusual. No. Truth is either plus or minus, whatever you want. It doesn't make any difference. If you see a person and that person is mean to you and you're mean back to them, then you just start a repartee of meanness. But if a person is mean to you and you are so beautiful, so pure and so wonderful, because that's your nature, you look at the person, you say, you're neat. My gosh, you're wonderful. That was refreshing. And they say, I was just mean to you and that was refreshing. No, you're refreshing. You're just such a thoughtful, loving, beautiful person. Yeah, you know, guy, you're crazy. I wasn't refreshing, I was mean to you. I was ready to kick you in the shins, you know. And hey, I only see you as a fabulous person, a beautiful person. I see you're just wonderful. Or you get away from the subject and you go on and say, you know, I was talking to your sister the other day, and your sister said that you were one of the most thoughtful people that she had ever known. And you know why? You're thoughtful because you put yourself last on any family outing. You put everybody first, and your family really appreciates. Who said that? Well, your sister. She did? Well, how about that? And the subject has totally changed. All the anxiety is out of the show, and you created a happy thing out of what could have been a very miserable thing. So what could have been and should have been a very angry thing turned out to be an incredulous thing to him, because he didn't realize his family respected and loved him, which they may not have until you painted your story. And when you painted your story, then he painted himself as a different being. When he went home, he was a lovable guy, you see. But these are the parables that Jesus told by the scads. And he told so many parables that only the ones that won the sweepstakes were chosen. Only the ones that the writers felt touched them. Because if you had had 1,000 people there and he had 1,000 parables, he would touch each person a little differently with each parable. You know? But this is how he referred to these things and taught these things. And the people loved him. The people loved him. Who didn't love him?
The Pharisees.
The officials, the Pharisees, the rabbis. See? And the Pharisees weren't really against him. They had him out to dinner a couple of times. They maybe were roasting him, but they had him out to dinner. But it was a wonderful thing. Okay. Jesus traveled the world. And wherever he went, he left an indelible impression on the cultures that he touched. There are many people around the world who claim that they have seen evidence of Jesus having been there. Which is most remarkable. Because what did he touch? He touched the people. And the people are very transient. But he touched the people. And in touching the people, he did great things, leaving an indelible impression on the cultures where he was. Now, we've read stories about the great master in Mexico, who came to the Toltec people there, and he came at the time their culture was very low, and they needed to learn how to do farming. They needed to learn how to make their soil rich, and they need to learn how to bring out great harvests and great products. And he was with them for 10 years or so. And after that period of time, he said to them, okay, now you know, you're on your own. And he walked away from them across the ocean. And they've never seen again. Now, who knows who this being was? Who knows who this consciousness was? It certainly was the Christ consciousness. Now, whether it was somebody else in that guise, which could be, or not, but you see, it was a person who was totally giving of themselves, totally outgoing of themselves, totally untouched by the circumstances and by the people who were worshiping him. Because that always happens. Whenever you do great things for people, they immediately start worshiping you. And they immediately start saying, well, do it for me, help me, you know, lift me up. And you teach them to lift themselves, and they don't want that. They want you to do it. So, this is why Jesus spoke in parables. Because when he spoke in parables, the people could readily adjust that to their own thinking, adjust that to their own way of living, and put the parables to work for them. And they did a marvelous job of it. Did a marvelous job of making the parables being something that was expressing who they were. All right. In Jesus' mind, he traveled the world, leaving his mark on the cultures wherever he was. And that people feel they, to this day, know it. And they feel John the Baptist was someplace because some mark was left here or there. And it's good. If that's what you feel or if that's what you think, good. It's not important. What is important? What is important? The only thing that is important is that if you got some good from it, and as you know, Ingeborg, we're not having a discussion here. We're just having a repartee from me.
and Jesus.
Go ahead, say it.
In Mexico, some people have the name Jesus nowadays.
Ingeborg, I think that is a startling piece of information. Absolute startling piece of information. That the name Jesus, Jesus, is a common name in the Spanish language, in the Mexican language, and in the language of Spain and Italy too. It's really quite something. But hey, cool. I'm only sorry they didn't name you Jesus. I think that would have been terrific. We'd have our own Jesus here. Terrific. Okay. I'm not being too silly. Okay. How Jesus orchestrated his baptism and had those who were able to see what he had going on for himself. Well, now, Jesus chose when he was going to be baptized. And so, if you read Illusions by Richard Bach, you read how Don Simoda was working on the engines, and it was early in the morning, and this celestial choir roared out through the sky in beautiful melodies and beautiful sounds. And he said, "Quiet." He said, "I'm working. I don't want all that sound. I don't want all that noise." And so they said, the sound calmed down. But then it didn't calm down enough. So he said, "All the way down. All the way down." And so it calmed down all the way, which was great. So, this is what Jesus did. Jesus was orchestrating his baptism. Now, is it impossible for you to snap your fingers and have a heavenly symphony be there? Is it possible for you to raise the dead, heal the sick? Is it possible for you to walk on fire? Is it possible for you to do all sorts of things? To fly, levitate? Is it possible for you to teleport? Yeah. Yes. Now, I'm going to digress for just a moment. If you ever have an illness, and you have that illness more than an instant, you want that illness. You are giving that illness your attention. Oh, I got a stomachache. Oh. And you moan and groan. You're giving it attention. You're fertilizing it. You're nurturing it. You're encouraging it to grow. You're watering it. And you see, that's what you're doing. Now, do you, beautiful people, do you have the ability to instantly heal yourself? Yes. Do you have the ability to instantly do it? Yes. Do you have the desire to do it? No. If you had the desire to do it, and let's say you had a tummy ache, you would take your hands with the energy massage and go over your tummy and say, "I like me, I like me, I like me, I'm whole and perfect, I like me, 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 I like me." 1,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000, You don't believe it. You don't believe it. You think that it's something that you cannot control. You think it's something you ate. You think it's something that is wrong with your body, hereditary or whatever you want to call it. You think it's something you cannot control. But how many seconds did you say, I like me, I'm home perfect, I'm like me, I'm home? How many seconds? You don't even do the energy massage at night, all of you. You don't even, no, Ellen, you don't. You think you do it. Ellen, how many times do you go over your body and say, I like me? Once? Twice? Four times?
Twice, three times.
Two times, yeah. Big deal.
a day, 3 times.
I like me, 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 I like me. Letting the hand just sort of go over your body in a gentle way, a hair's breadth above the body, and saying, I like me, I like me, I like me. Now, you're telling your body that you like it. And then you're telling the stem cells that are all throughout your body, hey, get to work on I like me. Forget that other aspect. You don't say forget that. But you get busy on what you want. But when your thought goes on to the pain, your thought goes on to the problem, and pain in the problem, pain in the problem, then the stem cells immediately go to work on the pain and the problem. And they join the pain and the problem brigade and are the pain and the problem. Now, you want to be wholeness. You want to be perfection. Well, this is what Jesus was teaching his people. And this is why his parables were so beautiful. His parables told the story in such a simple way that you could not take offense by it, even though you knew that it was about you, even though you knew that it was pointing right straight to you and your circumstance. You couldn't take offense at it because the story was so beautifully told, so simply told, so magnificently told, you know? Storytelling is an art that's not given to everybody. It's given to a few people, and some people are using it beneficially, and other people are using it just for fun, you know, and that's okay too. But when you have a gift like that, go out and use it. Use your parable telling story theme with a little moral in it, if you wish. Now, my Mr. Candle stories are all that way. And I beg you to look for a moral in there that I put in there on purpose. You can't find it. You think you know what it is, but it's not what you think it is. It's a totally different thing, because even I don't know what it is. I just let it happen. And as I let it happen, wonderful things happen. People take a turnaround that I hadn't expected and come out to be angels, whereas before they were just sort of the background in the story, you know, they weren't the real story. But this is the fun of it. This is the fun of it, you know? It's like the little boy who talked about putting his socks in his pocket, you know?
Yeah.
You know? Now, who would ever thought the story would turn out the way it did? You know? And it was for all the boys and girls who were listening. And not to be possessed by what? Your socks! My goodness sake.
Anything.
Anything, yeah. Okay. Jesus orchestrated his baptism. He orchestrated his baptism by being out there. And he had his cousin John the Baptist do the baptism, you know. And so, as he came into the River Jordan, there a crowd of people were around, as there were, because why did crowds gather? They didn't have television. They went out to be amused. They went out to have to see what the show is on, you know. Who's being baptized today? Who's doing this and who's doing that? Or if anybody. They didn't know it was a baptism. They went out there thinking it's just going to be something, and sure enough, there it was something. So Jesus turned on his full orchestra, and he had the doves all flying around lovely in the sky, and one dove coming down and lighting in front of him and saying, "This is my beloved son in whom I'm most proud." I mean, what a significant, wonderful thing to say. And who could take offense from it? And then what did John the Baptist say? He says, "Hey, I'm unworthy to baptize this being. This being should baptize me," you know. Now, what significant words, you know. How beautifully put. And when he said that, now, how long was the show? Just a moment or two. Just a moment or two. Now, the celestial choir was on a union scale, and so he didn't want to keep around on paying them too long, you know. So he just had them on a short time. But then he probably had a repeat performance out there. But it was great. See, this is what it's all about. This is what it's all about. He knew how to orchestrate that. He knew how to bring it forth. Now, how would Daniel do it? Daniel, sleight of hand to bring it forth. How do magicians do that? How do people do anything? How did David Copperfield do the silly things that he does? The magnificent silly things that he does, which are totally outrageous. And yet, thousands of people believe that they saw what they didn't see. Amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Just imagine if you were having the baptism of Jesus, and you're hired by Jesus to put it on. And so you hire him, what's his name? David Copperfield. And David comes along, says, okay, what do you want? I want music in the background, I want doves, I want this, I want that. And so they say, David says, okay. Now, by the way, how many doves you like? Whatever you want. Well, just a dozen is enough, you know. So, but I want one that is a spokesman for the doves. And so, lo and behold, before this large group of people who were all around, and they were down the river and up the river, and they were, you know, a good half mile or mile away, and they were all hearing this just as though it were being spoken right into their ear. And it's true. It's true. This is how the Bible reports it. And the music was there. Glorious, beautiful music that was a heavenly choir of angels. I tell you, it's the first time that group heard a heavenly choir of angels. And then after that was over, it quieted down, and then the doves fluttered around, and one dove came forward as the spokesman for the group and said, "This is my beloved son in whom I'm most proud." And you see, all the people heard that. Well, now, was someone using ventriloquism? Or was it really a voice coming down? Who set the program in motion? Jesus did. He could work. He could have done it without David, you know. But David was available, and he needed a job. And so Jesus gave him a job and said, "You take care of it." Now you think, "Herb, you are being silly." No, I'm not. I'm showing you the capacity was there.
Yeah.
If David Copperfield can do this in a theater and fool 1,000 people, Jesus can do it in the open air and not fool anybody. Just show everyone that it can be done. Because the moment will come when David Copperfield's real genius will be known. And what he will do will be some fantastic things. Right now, he's just doing Ledger Domain. Right now, he's just doing something to excite people, something to make a few bucks for himself and as a magician. But the day will come when he steps out. Now, David Copperfield, Jesus is talking. "I commission you to speak my word and have it be done now." David says, "Okay, Dad, what do you want me to say?" And Jesus said, "There now is peace on earth, and it began with me. Let's speak that into all the world, that every heart in the world hears that, knows that, is that, and it is done now." So David says, "Okay, got you, Dad." And so then he says, "There now is peace on earth, and it began with me." And then this spread throughout every heart in the entire world. Everyone heard it just as loud as they wanted to hear it. Some heard it as a shout. Some heard it as a murmur. Some heard it as a song. But they all heard it. And how do you think that happens? The Christ consciousness is always there. Mm-hmm. And it's always carrying out these beautiful things. Well, he let the world know what he had going for himself. And because of that, people hated him even more. The rabbis and the priests and so forth. Because they saw now he got a good endorsement. He got an endorsement from God in his baptism. And now, how do you handle that? They let him become a rabbi. They let him become a priest of the temple. And of course, he's a priest of any temple, wherever he went, because he's a Hebrew and he's a rabbi. Beautiful thing. Okay. What were Jesus' thoughts at the death of John the Baptist? Jesus' thoughts at the death of John the Baptist were, "He only sleepeth." They cut the head of John the Baptist off. That makes it a little difficult to say he was only sleeping. And Salome was dancing around with the head, you know. But after a while, that too was righted. And that too was over. And John played his part. And John knew he wasn't going to die. He knew he was immortal. And the time was there when it was all brought together. And it was back in normal way. Now, who the head was thrown off here, the body was thrown off there after a time, you know?
Yeah.
Because who wants to keep a dead body around? They smell. So, when it was tossed off, it instantly was brought together into its total cell, because the spirit of John the Baptist certainly wasn't killed. The spirit of John the Baptist was always very much there, but it allowed the game to be played. And Jesus thought to himself, "John, you do like to play a wild hand, don't you? Well, John, I'll show you a really wild hand later." And so at the crucifixion, he showed him a really wild hand. And you can be sure, John was there. Yeah, he's watching the show too. Better than television. So, I tell you, Jesus trained his disciples in the expression they already were accomplished beings. He trained them, "It is done unto you according to your belief. It's done unto you according to your belief." Now, believe that it is done. Believe that it is done. Believe that it's done. Know that it's done. Whatever you speak your word for, know it's done. Be a David Copperfield, you know. Make the illusion, and make the illusion your reality, and let it be, and let this happen, let it be manifest, let it be done. Now, was he ready to do that? Were the people ready to do that? Well, let's see. What does it say here? Jesus viewed his miracles as normal activities. He trained, he viewed raising the dead not as raising the dead. He trained his disciples in the expression that they already were accomplished beings. That's very important, isn't it? Okay, now, how did he have them all consider miracles as a normal activity? Well, Jesus said, "Within your body are an infinite number of stem cells. And these stem cells are all eager to return your body to its original purity and integrity. And if you'd like to have it returned to your original purity and integrity, then of course you have to give that attention. Now, if you want your body to not be returned to its original purity and integrity, but to express some negative aspect, then you give that attention. Because whatever you give your attention to, whatever you believe in, whatever you turn your thought to, that's what you're going to experience. Now, there's nothing bad about it. If you want to have a body that's all eaten up with cancer, then you can have that. There's nothing bad about that. It's kind of wasteful. Have you ever thought, here we take the cream of our nation's crop of young people, and we send them off to war at every country, from 17 through 30. We take all these young men, the brightest, smoothest, smartest, healthiest, the very essence of our nation. You know, they're the fatherhood of our country. And we send them off to war to kill each other and to learn how to be angry and to learn how to hate and to learn how to kill. And then, after we got rid of half of them, then the other half come back home. And when they come back home, they're a killing force. They have accepted that they can kill people. It's okay. It's okay to hurt people. It's okay to take their lives. I mean, and now what are they going to do? Now they're going to become the parents of the children who are the next generation, and they're going to teach them, well, under some circumstances it's okay to kill. Under some and what does the law of cause and effect, and what does the Ten Commandments say? Thou shalt not kill. No exception. Thou shalt not kill. And yet every nation on earth thinks that they're the exception. They will go out and kill on behalf of their neighbor because their neighbor is being misused. Well, why don't you just go out and buoy up your neighbor with your support and your love and your caring, you know? So this is what Jesus was teaching everybody. He was teaching to love your neighbor like yourself. To love your neighbor like yourself. To love your neighbor like yourself. And there will be war no more. That's the theme that he would like to have broadcast. And that's the concept that he'd like to have broadcast. And that's what he did. He broadcast that. But who was listening? Everyone. Everyone was listening. But some people spent 2 seconds saying, I'm whole and perfect, while those who were whole and perfect lived in the awareness that the wholeness and perfect was theirs right now. And never changing. Never changing. Okay. Jesus viewed the dead as not rising from the dead, but as never having been dead. If you and I think of people as being dead, we don't expect to raise them, do we?
No.
If you say someone's dead, you say, well, that's all she writes. What did Jesus say?
He sleeps.
They're only sleeping. Now, can you have the consciousness of Jesus? Now look. you're absolutely without redemption. David Copperfield can do his magical tricks, which really are real, but he can do his magical tricks, make you think it's an illusion, and make you think it's an illusion when he changes it back. Make you think it's an illusion. If he can do that for thousands of people, why can't you do it for you, saying you're whole and perfect, saying I live in my abundance, I live in my ideal spirit, mind, body? Why can't we say that? Because we allow ourselves to have the other thought in there. And as long as we allow the other thought, Jesus didn't. He was absolutely one-pointed, and nobody could get in his way. Because if he spoke his word, then it was done. It was done. And when he spoke his word, no matter what he spoke it for, it was done. When he told the fishermen where to catch the fish, what happened? They caught the fish there. He said, oh, come on, you guys. Put your net out on the other side of the boat. So they put their net on the other side of the boat, and they sunk the boat. They filled the boat with fish. This side, no fish. This side, all the fish. Well, I mean, obviously, stupid. He spoke his word. He wanted them to speak their word. Now, if they didn't put their net on the opposite side of the boat, because obviously there were no fish there, they would never catch the fish, would they? But because they followed what he said.
Directions.
Followed directions. And this is very important. Okay. Jesus trained his disciples in the expression, they already were accomplished beings. He taught them, you already are masters. You already can do it. You can do it. You can do it. And wherever you go, if anyone doesn't accept it, kick the dust of their community off your feet and go to the next place. And when you go someplace, don't take a lot of clothes along. Just take one cloak and a cane, a staff, even a staff, and no bread, no water, no nothing. Wherever you go, if they don't feed you and give you drink and give you a place to sleep, then you haven't got your message across. Get out of there. Go only where they will listen to you. Do not drop your pearls before the
swine.
The swine. But talk to everyone And if they listen to you, great. If they don't listen, then leave. Then leave. You know, we really ought to study a little more about how what David Copperfield does and how he does his things. Because that's quite magical. Quite marvelous. And if that many people believe it, something interesting is going on.
It's true.
Now, if he can take a cloud of consciousness and have it believe one thing, which is contrary to what the reality may be, that's amazing. Just think, if you had that ability in you to take a cloud of consciousness and say, peace. Just imagine if you went to the war zone and you went out to the war zone like Abraham Lincoln went out to the battlefront, and he stood there with his tall hat on and they blew it off him. But he stood there and he says, peace. And then he turned and went home, and peace followed. Now, they don't make a big fuss about that, but that's what they said did happen, and happened. Now, you see, this happens to us, too. Peace. Would you like to learn how to just say peace and have the consciousness that peace sort of include the whole vast group of people who are at war? Just imagine that. Now, let me ask you a silly question. Who or what is at war?
Consciousness.
The legislators. The legislators are the ones who determine the war. Mm-hmm. Not the people. The people have to go. The legislators. So then, how many legislators are there? Maybe 100 here and 100 there. 200 people send two nations to war. How absolutely unthinkable. Now, can you imagine sending David Copperfield to this group of legislators and saying, peace? You know, and with not even out loud to them. You know, peace. You know, I surround you with my pure white light of love. All your ways are peace and all your paths are pleasant. And then he goes to the other legislators, you know, and says the same thing. And then the legislators get back together again and say, let's have a party. But you see, that's all it takes. Now, is what I'm saying absolutely stupid?
No.
It is so real, and yet we haven't taken the time to do it. Just imagine if the United States were to take 200 people and give each of the people one of the legislators to be responsible for, and that they were to go and speak their word from where they are or with the legislators in person and say, there now is peace on earth and it began with me, and instantly have it happen. Ooh, wouldn't that be glorious? Now, do you think in Jesus' life, in Jesus' time, he did that?
Yeah.
Do you think that many times he went many places and just spoke his word? There now is peace on earth and it began with me. Because he could not allow it to be in his presence without endorsing it. So, what he did, whenever he got a whiff of it, he realized all is in divine order. You and I, whenever we get a whiff of anything, inharmonious, we speak our word and say, all is in divine order. Okay. Now, Jesus viewed life not as a business, but as a profession. We're not in this world to make money. We're in this world to live our life, be ourselves, and have fun. That's profession. Now, what is your profession in dealing with warring nations? What's your profession?
I am peace.
You are peace, and you see all is peace.
Yes.
Okay. What's your profession when you hear of illness anywhere?
I'm whole and perfect, and all is whole and perfect.
I am whole and perfect, and all is whole and perfect. What's your profession when you hear that there's poverty anywhere?
All is independently wealthy.
I think you'd like to reword that. Say it again.
I see independent wealth.
Everyone
is independently wealthy.
I see everyone in this circumstance independently wealthy. Or something. You see, you can't just make a generic statement that has no legs or no feet, no place to stop. It has to have a stopping point. So, what do you do when you see poverty anywhere?
I see you enjoying...
I am whole and perfect, or I am abundant.
I am abundance.
And I see all the world abundant. You got my point?
Yes.
Yeah, see, this is what, but it's easy for us to get off the track. It's easy for us to think, well, we got to cover a few other ballparks. But no, not really. Now, what would you speak your word for if you were visiting a couple and they were tooth and nail going after each other, just ripping each other apart?
I'm peace.
I'm sorry?
I'm peace.
Oh, you say, I am peace.
And peace is everywhere.
I'm sorry?
And everything is
peace. I am peace, and I am surrounded by peaceful people.
Right.
But when you say peace is everywhere, that's too generic to start out with. That's okay, coming a little bit more. But I am peace.
I'm peace, and I'm surrounded by peaceful people.
Fantastic. And how long would it take before that couple who was disagreeing with one another... before they start hugging each other?
Well,
you're taking too much time. If it took that much time, I mean, they could kill each other.
No, but
now.
The point is, I don't even see that. I'm peace.
I asked you a question.
Okay.
I asked you a question because you're a professional. You see, and you're not speaking your word because you're not a professional. Now, if I say to you, there's a couple fighting in front of you, and then you say, I am peace, I'm surrounded by peace, and I see everyone in my world peace. Okay, great. But if you say, I am peace, I'm surrounded by peace, and the world is at peace, that doesn't cover the issue. Everyone in my world is at peace, you see. You see, if you're going to create it in your world, then take responsibility for it, because it came to your attention. Now, everything doesn't come to your attention.
Yeah,
thank God, huh?
Yeah,
but your consciousness is clear in many areas. That's beautiful. Jesus viewed life not as a business, but as a profession. And what was his first profession? I am a
practitioner.
I'm a practitioner. I practice what I believe. I'm a practitioner. Jesus told his disciples, he was going to leave them so the Comforter could come unto them. Now, when he said he was going to leave them so the Comforter could come unto them, he knew that he had taught them as much as he could teach them. They had to go the next part alone. They had to do and apply what he taught them. And his being there any longer wouldn't teach them anything more, because they were up to here. Now they had to practice. And when they practiced, then the Comforter was there with them, guiding them, helping them, showing them the way. And what else? Come on.
To strongly believe it.
Yeah. No, I'm talking about who else was there. Who else was there? Jesus, he never left. I must go so the Comforter can come. So you stop believing in me and paying attention to me and having me do all your work for you. It's up to you what your consciousness is. Did Jesus ever leave?
No.
Thank you. Now, Jesus was untouched before, on, or after the cross. Jesus was untouched before, on, or after the cross. How could he be untouched and have blood coming out of his body from the thorns on his head?
Illusion.
Well, he was just a great David Copperfield, wasn't he?
Yeah.
And was the Was the cross too heavy for him to carry?
No.
No. Why did he have these other people help him carry it?
Well, that was part of the...
It was part of the show. Mm-hmm. Part of the show. Now, what do you think he was doing through this whole thing?
Being observant.
And when Pontius Pilate said, "You!" And Jesus said, "So they say." Huh? I mean, what a consciousness to say that. "So they say." And be untouched by it. And what did Pontius Pilate say? "I have nothing against this guy, you know? So I'm going to turn you over to the mob." The mob of priests and rabbis and people of the church. How nice, huh?
Mm.
Yeah. But you see, that didn't bother Jesus. Why?
Because he was untouched.
He was untouched. And where was he in consciousness? Living in his purity. Living in his wholeness. Now, when they nailed him to the cross with his hands there, what happened? Again, he was untouched.
Mm-hmm.
And what did the other criminals on the cross with him say, the other one?
They recognized...
They thought, "Hey, you're pretty cool."
Yeah.
You know? I mean, you're not sweating this thing at all, are you? You know? And Jesus said, "No." You noticed that, huh? And the guy says, "Yeah, I did. Hey, you're pretty cool, guy. You know, I'm pain. I mean, pain. But I look at you, and I'm peace. I look at you, and all my pain is gone. I look at you, and I feel good." And Jesus said, "Today art thou with me in paradise." But you see, what's going on? What's going on? You see, you think that's stupid? You think that's crazy? Look at Daniel in the lion's den. They put him in a den of hungry lions. And what does he do? He tells them his life story, you know? He likes himself. And it's a beautiful story. And this is what Jesus did. He liked himself. And he says, "John, this is your ma. Take care of her." He said John was to be the son of Mary now, to take care of him. And big deal. Mary didn't need anybody to take care of her. She should have had her Joseph around, you know. She should have had her other children around. But Jesus was only 33, wasn't he? And what were the rest of the kids? They're in their 30s too. So what's going on there? Yes.
Jesus was the firstborn, and the other children came after him.
Yeah, well, they were all young too.
Yes.
They were all young too. Yes. Well, what do you mean Jesus was the firstborn? How do you know that he was only the firstborn?
She was at the wedding.
Huh?
She was at the wedding.
But how do you know he was the firstborn?
It said.
Oh, he was a what?
Immaculate
conception.
Yes.
In other words, the tube hadn't been used before, right?
Yes.
Right. It was a fresh, brand new tube that he was coming out of. Brand new, fresh, unused,
yes.
Untouched, just for him.
Yes.
Okay, that's why his brothers and sisters were younger. But hey, they didn't have to be much younger. Because once she had a kid, she said, "Hey, that's cool, you know." And Joseph said, "Let's have some of our own, you know." And so then they did. But they played a game.
32, 31, 32, 31, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32, 32
Yeah, easily. Yeah, easily. Which is very good. Okay. Jesus was untouched before, on, and after the cross. You like this? You know, I do have a way of making the Bible interesting. Okay. Now, and true. Jesus did not leave. He changed his form and continued to travel the universe as a revealed being. Now, many people write stories about Mary Magdalene and how she and Jesus were living together and living in France together and stuff like that, and how this and that and the other thing. Oh, beautiful stories, beautiful concepts, and whatever they want to do, you know. And they just had lots of fun with it. But why do that? Why do we need to have him still be alive in the flesh that we could touch and know and feel? Because we don't believe in ourselves. We want to turn our attention to ourselves, believe in ourselves, and know it. And that's what he pointed to. He said, I have more flocks that I have attended that you know not of. And he had to go and attend those flocks. But they were all over the world, all over the universe. Now, how could he travel all over the world when he didn't have his private jet, you know? He had to take his private what?
Wings.
Private consciousness.
His private consciousness, right. And he did, didn't he?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, Jesus told the disciples and the world that all is God and each are the Christ consciousness which he demonstrated. He told the world that God dwells in man. And each man is God, and each man is God. Luke 17:22. He told it so clearly, so positively, and so fully. And even then, nobody wants to believe it. Well, now, fortunately, we have someone who believes it. And David Copperfield is doing a great job. Wow. But really, he'd have to believe it to do the things he's doing.
Yeah.
He's doing wonderful things. Now, I'm not worshiping David Copperfield, but I'm saying that if he can make people, that many people, believe what he wants them to believe, he's magic. He should go on stock market sales. You know? They buy my stock, you know, and have all these thousands of people buy his stock. Wow. But is he happy?
Oh, yeah.
Is he wealthy and healthy? Is he surrounded by beautiful girls?
I'm sure.
You know it. If you've ever seen his shows, we ought to get a video with him on it sometime. But he's a fascinating guy. Yeah. He's a little bit pompous, but he's fascinating.
Yeah.
You know what pompous means?
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's beautiful. Yes. Jesus' life is a never-ending story. It's going on and on and on and on and on. And every day it has new aspects to it, new adventures to it, new avenues of expressing itself in our life. Because you are the living Christ. You are the living Jesus. You are the living God. And it's up to you to be yourself and have fun. And if you ever are not being yourself and having fun, I will take your godhood away from you. Which we never could do. But see, that's what our purpose here. To be ourselves and have fun and enjoy ourselves. And that's what the inside Jesus head is all about. All the time throughout his entire life, he knew. From birth to resurrection, he always knew. And he was always on top of it. And he always lived beyond his head. He lived in the totality of all. So, my dear friends, have a lovely Easter. And thank you for letting me share these thoughts with you today. I love you. I love you.
I love you.
I love you.
I love you.